Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Chris Kraft is Deputy Director of the Manned Spacecraft Center. He oversees not only his familiar flight operations, but the overall operation of manned spaceflight as coordinated through this Houston complex. Chris, we're winding down, I would say, the remaining Apollo missions, Apollo 15, 16, 17, three more lunar explorations. After that, Skylab, an Earth orbiting space station. After that, hopefully, the shuttle system. Let's talk about the future of manned spaceflight as envisioned by your organization and the overall U.S. space effort. Okay. What's going to happen just with the remaining Apollo flights? What's the thrust of those?
Well, we spent a great deal of effort over the last year and a half to 2 years to modify the Apollo hardware and add a large number of experiments as well as a rover vehicle. And those are the three remaining Apollo flights. They're very detailed scientific investigations of the environment around the moon as well as on the lunar surface. With the rover, we're able to do a great deal more exploration of the surface itself from a geological sense. So the payoff from the lunar programs will be primarily from these next three flights. We've also chosen some very interesting areas. We've already chosen, of course, the Hadley Rill, which is a very exciting place to go to in Apollo 15.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is really the most difficult landing site of all, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't quite say that. I'd say it was one of the more exciting landing sites to go to because you're landing over a mountain range down into sort of an opening in this mountain chain. And it's going to be exciting, I think, from the viewer's point of view because of the mountainous region that we will be in and the fact that you're landing next to a rill, which is very similar to something like a canyon here on Earth, not the Grand Canyon, but certainly some of the large river canyons that are a couple of thousand feet wide, and that I think that will be exciting. But I don't think that the terrain we're landing on is any more difficult. We have to be very careful that we get to the right place for this particular mission, but I think we've got those procedures pretty well worked out now from Apollo 12 and 14, and we're fairly confident we're going to be able to land there. On Apollo 16, we're going to Descartes, which is another probably a very old area on the moon, which many of the people have great interest in getting some of the oldest material from the lunar surface. And then Apollo 17 will probably go to another equally interesting place, although we haven't made that decision yet. But it's a very complex scientific mission and aimed exactly at getting the most science we can out of these missions from the standpoint of the instrumentation we leave there, both on and around the moon, the pictures we will take of the moon with the cameras we have on board, the service module of the command and service module, and the work the astronauts will do on the moon with the rover.
Then after Apollo comes what is called the Skylab, which is a three-man orbiting space station. In that, as I understand it, you expect to send men up for longer and longer periods of time, but it'll be an Earth-orbiting scientific station, right?
Yes. What we've done is
that's in what year?
In 73. And what we've done is take the Saturn IV stage and renovate that tank into a living quarters for the astronauts. We've added the consumables and systems necessary to make it a livable system. We built in various features and floors and rooms and added tanks and so forth necessary for support to the crew and put a windows in it so that they can see out. And then we've added a module, which is called a multiple docking adapter for docking purposes to get the command and service module docked to the system. And then it has a large solar telescope called the Apollo Telescope Mount. It has solar panels for electrical power supply and so forth. So it's a pretty good space station. Now, there will be three missions that go up to this space station.
To the first one.
Yes, and we will. The first flight will last 28 days. Then those men will come down, and 2 months later we'll send up another flight. And if everything has gone okay, these men will stay up 56 days. And then the third flight, a month later, we'll go up and spend another 56 days. So it'll be 9 different men, 3 at a time, which will spend these periods in the station. Now, the first flight is aimed primarily toward medical experimentation. We will do some other experiments with both the Apollo telescope and the Earth resources packages and other science measurements we have on board. But for the first time, we will be making detailed measurements of the response of the three crewmen to weightlessness.
This is something that both the United States and the Soviet Union are very interested in, this longer duration, say 1 month duration of man in the weightlessness of space.
Precisely. And we have had men up for 14 days. The Russians have had men up for 18 days. And we are looking now to a long period of time, which will allow us to properly evaluate, without too much risk to the crew, the detailed responses of the body to weightlessness. We will be measuring the byproducts that come from the man after having eaten very specially prepared food. We will measure his capability to respond to exercise. We'll measure what's happening to his cardiovascular system. We'll measure his sleep characteristics. We'll measure the changes in his blood chemistry as the flight goes on from what we saw pre and post flight, the way in which he responds to nutrients and so forth. So it is a very detailed look at man. For the first time, and
that almost reminds me of where you started back in Mercury, Chris.
Well, yes, it does. But in Mercury, we were considering the possibilities that man would not be able to survive at all under these conditions. That he would not be able to perform as he did here on Earth. That he would become disoriented as a result of not having the 1G vector on his body. But we found that, of course, is not the case. But now we need, as a result of our experience, some detailed measurements of what's going on in the body so that do, in fact, we need artificial gravity in future space stations? Do we need to possibly use some drugs? What kind of exercise profiles do we have to go through? Should we provide some centrifuge for preparing them for reentry into the 1G atmosphere? All of those things are things that have to be determined before you can advance in long-duration space flight.
Well, then there's a possibility also of a second Skylab in Earth orbit before the next major program, the Space Shuttle, is ready. When would that come, if it's approved?
Well, because of the time period it may require us to develop the shuttle hardware, where we're trying to develop a low-cost operating vehicle, the consideration is being given to the possibility of another Skylab mission or the use of some other Apollo hardware for Earth orbital missions. And we're in the study phase of determining what those missions should be and what applications we can get and what usefulness we can make of the instruments and hardware we have.
You touched on something I think is worth reiteration. The Skylab program really is an outgrowth of the basic Apollo hardware, isn't it?
Indeed. It is the Apollo hardware that we
including have. The station itself, is, as you mentioned, is the S-4B, the upper stage of the big Saturn V rocket.
That's correct, the structure that we're using. Now, of course, the internal arrangements and so forth are all new equipment, and the experiments are very detailed and very expensive, of course, because of the space applications that must be applied to this kind of hardware. But it is basically the use of reuse of hardware we have already developed.
But then beyond that, the really long-range, most ambitious program in manned spaceflight in this country is the Space Shuttle. What is it?
Well, as you have surmised over the last 10 years, the cost of spaceflight operations is very great. We've been experimenting with various techniques of how to get into space, and as a result, the hardware has been very expensive, and we don't reuse it. It's expendable. We use the booster one time and throw it away, and of course that increases the cost. Now, our concept here is to come up with a totally reusable system, something that we can use several hundred times rather than throwing it away. And this requires the combination of rocketry and airplanes into a concept of reducing the cost of operations. Now, not only will it reduce the cost of putting the vehicle up there and therefore reduce the cost of total operations of scientific payloads, but it also should allow us to reduce the cost of the payloads themselves, because if they don't work, so what? We'll bring them back and make them and fix them and make them work and take them back up again. And those kinds of aspects, as well as the environment that the payload has to endure as it goes up. Once you take those two elements away from the cost of the vehicle, then we should be able to do many, many more things in space with the capabilities that we will have for taking up relatively large-sized payloads and doing things that people probably haven't even conceived of in space, of manufacturing things, of taking advantage of the being in this position above the Earth, not only maybe in terms of space stations, but synchronous orbits of looking at one spot on the Earth. The whole new, I think it will bring about a whole new realm of communications, a whole new look at meteorology, even though we do have some advanced techniques from space today in those fields. I think it will advance those even more. I think we'll begin to see almost an unlimited use of the zero-G or a weightless environment and a vacuum. Those are two kinds of environments that the scientist in the laboratory is seeking to get here daily. And it's very difficult to get, and there it is in space. It's free. It's right, ready for use, and I think that's going to cause an explosion of the use of the space environment.
The planets, that's somewhere way out there, though, isn't it?
Well, that's probably true, but not as far as many people think. I think someday in the not-too-distant future, and I hope I'm living to see it, we'll be visiting Mars and Venus.
Thank you very much, Chris Kraft, American space pioneer and deputy director of the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. This is Rhett Turner, Voice of America, Houston.